Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest PMH Atwater, who today we're talking about her book, Children of the Fifth World, A Guide to the Coming Changes in Human Consciousness. We've interviewed PMH several times in the last few months, and if you go to www.plasticos.com or just Google Temple of Health and Atwater, I think her interviews will come up. We've talked a lot about future memory, which is a unique psychic phenomena that can occur to some people who've had near-death experiences or other spiritual experiences. We've talked about near-death experiences, the rest of the story, and which is kind of a summary work of her many, many books on near-death experience. And today we're going to talk about Children of the Fifth World. I think she became interested in this because of the similarities with her interviews with the children undergoing near-death experiences. But certainly something is happening, and probably in the nick of time, to save us from the problems we've created. Hello, PMH, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, and I'm raring to go.
Great, great. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you became interested in researching and writing the book Children of the Fifth World?
Well, yes, with near-death kids. You know, my research has been ongoing now for over 33 years, with adult and child experiencers of near-death states. And while I was doing all this research, I kept noticing that children, everyday children born in this country, other countries, were manifesting or displaying either the same or similar traits to those children who had undergone a near-death experience. And that caused a lot of questions to pop up in my mind. You know, I became very curious. It's like, how can that be? And so I started observing, talking, keeping track of stats, taking a really good in-depth look at today's children and to see, okay, what's going on here? Why is there such a similarity? And I discovered what, you know, what we all call evolution, but it's evolution in our times. It really seems to be, as near as I can tell, and I think it's very blatant, that there is a genetic mutation difference occurring now in the human family with our children, especially since 1982 on. And they're different, and they're different in, I think, specific ways. So I wrote the book, Children of the Fifth World, because I also had done a lot of work with good old planet Earth itself and the universe and all of these changes that our world is going through and the different predictions and the different, you know, ideas about the different worlds. We go through large cycles of change on Earth, and we can sort of plot these or at least have an understanding of them. And even studies of the Mayan calendar introduces you to this idea of these large evolutionary cycles on the planet. So I'm, you know, studying that, taking a look at that. And, you know, I'm a field worker. I do a lot of on-site work and dealing with the actual scientists, the actual people, walking the land, you know, doing all of this kind of work as well. I'm not an academic, per se. Mm-hmm. Certainly I keep track of some of the papers and statistics and articles, but most of my work is sort of out the door. You know, I'm out in life and looking around and observing, asking questions, very curious person. I was born that way. And, you know, I was one of these people that drive everybody nuts as a little kid. Why? And they'd always say, shut up, find out for yourself. So I did. And I bring that to the table as an adult, still that big fat why, and really found a lot of things when I began to take that broader look at what's happening here, what's happening there. And I found that a lot of the material that's out there you can bring together, that you can, you know, tie up some threads here. And that's what I've done in Children of the Fifth World. I've taken as in-depth a look as I possibly can at a whole lot of different fields and a whole lot of different perspectives to see if there's a common thread, and there are many of them.
Well, let me give you one of my experiences with the Children of the Fifth World. And it's not a normal experience. It's an experience in children's emergency rooms, okay? Because
okay.
I treated some of these children. Of course, I've treated children for 30 years, so I've treated the indigos and the, you know, all of the different groups. But the children recently, the ones born, like you say, after a certain time period, have a different quality. When they get injured, what happens during our time in the ER, we give them something to sedate them a little bit, to, you know, just to take the edge off. We numb them up after we sedate them a little bit. They don't go all the way out. They just don't care very much. But when we you know, inject local into the incision, and it doesn't hurt very much because it's already open, and then we sew them up, and then I noticed a couple of things that were interesting. Number one, they would come out of the sedation right when they needed to, right when I was done, which was weird because it could be 20 minutes or it could be an hour and 20 minutes. That doesn't happen. Then the other weird thing is that the numbing medicine would wear off right after I was done. Isn't that odd? You know, again, it would last as long as it needed to last. And then the third thing, they would look up at me, and they were just really incredible little beings. They would say things like, thank you, after I finished. And that just doesn't happen in a 3- or 4-year-old.
So I noticed they're knowing. They're knowing, and
children are old souls.
You know, they'll just let you have it.
That's right. They're old souls. They are spiritually aware at a time when,
right,
you know, we weren't, certainly. It's just very interesting.
Yeah.
And very different than the children before them, who, you know, would be more typical of children. You know, they wouldn't remember the situation because the verse said would wipe the memory out, but these kids would remember. So I think they're different.
Well, you know, it has been predicted or thought or known for a long time that the human race would be soon undergoing a quantum leap, that is to say, mm-hmm, an evolutionary leap. And in my opinion, that's happening now. I truly, fully believe it happened. If you want the trigger date, I would give you 1982, mm-hmm, but I would also say, you know, years on either side of that, but specifically 1982. And the reason I'm using that as sort of a line in the sand is because that's the year the personal computer came out. And these kids are so linked to the digital age and electronic devices and computers, iPads, and, you know, on and on and on. And also, the children born since then, their first view of the world is through a screen. They're not
right
out the door like you and me. Their first view of the world is through a screen. So they have a different concept of reality from the get-go. And that's one of the things I recognize in these kids right away, because they were so much like near-death kids. You know, after a child has undergone a near-death experience, they're a very different child. Many of them lose their bonding to mom and dad. It's like they bond to the other side instead of this side, depending on the age
right
of the child, especially those who had their experience, you know, related to birth trauma or right after birth, that they will tend to bond to the other side. So I'm looking at these kids and I'm saying, wait a minute here. You know, we've got a very different breed of cats, if you'll pardon that particular phraseology. But, yeah, these kids really are different.
Yeah, and I think it has to do with not the veil not being so, tightly wound around them. In other words, they they're more multidimensional, and they live that way. So they're not so bound by the parent bonding, because they have guides and energy coming in from another dimension that will calm them and educate them and give them solace when they're hurt or when they're frightened.
Right. They're getting input from a lot of different levels. Right.
Exactly. And that's really the way we're supposed to be.
It sort of freaks out parents.
I mean, that's natural, I think. I mean, I think that's really natural. I don't think it's natural for us to be so cut off from the other realms. In fact, it's crazy. It's not even good for survival. I mean,
right.
The other realms can get us out of very dangerous situations. And, in fact, it's the best way to get out of very dangerous situations when you're a child is to be guided from the other realm. You know,
right.
And now
we've got children everywhere who are wide open to this. And wide open to spiritual realms and spirit beings, and to them it's normal. Where
right.
to us,
well,
it is
they don't know anything different.
To them, it's normal.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think many adults, are also rediscovering this realm through meditation and other spiritual practices. They may have lost it for a while. But if you engage in spiritual practices, you will run into this realm. And then when you run into it for long enough, if you have a problem and then the solution comes, you realize that that's a natural place to seek help. People pray, but people don't realize that you can also listen to that realm and gain information, specific information. Like if I lose something, I'll ask before I go to bed that the minute I wake up, I know where it is.
Yeah.
And nine times out of ten,
I do that
works.
Myself. I'll say, okay, where are you? Show me.
Exactly, yeah.
Give me a hint. Talk to me. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they do.
And you need to pay particular attention when you first wake up to the thoughts that you have, because they're very protective. They're very wise thoughts. You may dismiss them as you get up and do your routine and get on to work if you're late or whatever, but you shouldn't dismiss them. You should remember or try to even journal what it is when you think right in the, pay attention to it. Don't let it slip from you, because that's times of guidance, and that guidance can be incredibly important, including, guidance not to do something later that day. The other realms do not have linear time like we do. They can look across time, so your guides in that realm can tell you things that you need to avoid or things that you need to make sure you do. And
well, this is where
so these children
this
are
knowing,
born with this.
Which is now just so widespread. The kids are coming in with it. Really
right.
has been a part of our world, our planet, I think for a number of years, in fact, very long eons of time, but we haven't really noticed it or paid attention to the specific type of patterning that's occurring. And, when you mentioned labels like indigo or crystal or starseed, I invite everybody to take those labels and toss every single one of them, just toss them out the door. And take the characteristics those labels supposedly described, bunch them together, and you have the pattern of these new kids. And if you want to get a particular type of model that you could better understand what's happening here, I would invite then people to go back to the esoteric traditions of root races, R-O-O-T, root, meaning your basic gene pool or the basic DNA in the human family, And mm-hmm. that's what the root races describe. And Theosophy, it was very good at talking about root races, subroot races. Edgar Cayce also talked a little bit about them. But you can go even further back than that when they talked about life streams or advanced beings or light rays or, you know, different ways mm-hmm. of understanding that the human family then changes and grows and cycles on the earth plane, almost as if maybe we were some kind of an experiment. You know, how are we going to do on the earth plane? And so we have these huge cycles of change and evolutionary patterning that occurs. And if you study the root races or the idea of root races, that then makes some kind of sense. You can do something with that, and if you turn to that as a patterning or a model, then you come to realize that what's happening now is what we call the rise or the ascendancy of the fifth root race. The fifth, number five, has been around for a while, but now it has spread to the point that it has literally overspread land masses and population groups. So it's now everywhere. It's not just United States, Canada, Europe, and, you know, a few countries like that. It's everywhere on the planet. We're getting fifth root race types. So what are these types? These are the masters of communication. These are the masters of intuition, creativity, innovation. This is truly a rise of that which is instantaneous. But if you take a look at the pluses and minuses, you know, I'd like to share that with you because these kids are intelligent. Mm-hmm. They're really smart. About 1/3 of them are geniuses, even if learning disabled. Even these kids with autism, mm-hmm. if they take the Raven's test instead of the regular standard IQ test, because the Raven's test tests fluid intelligence, what you can learn. If you have them take that test, those who do, 1/3 of those are geniuses. When I say genius, I'm meaning they're scoring between 150 to 160 and above. And we know that a genius, well, it depends on who you talk to. Some of them say, well, it's 132 to 136. Other teachers say, no, it begins at 140. But these are 150 to 160 and above. So we're talking about really smart kids. They're unusually music-oriented. Now, everybody is. But these kids are unusually rhythmic and music-oriented. They're very creative. They're very spiritually minded. They come in spiritually minded. Not religious, spiritually minded. They know God. You know, you don't have to tell them about God. They know that. They're intuitive. Many remember past lives. They're excellent with math. And I tell parents and school teachers, don't let these kids fool you. They're good at math. They're natural-born healers. They're ready-to-go entrepreneurs. They're irreverent. They're quirky. And they're unique in their beliefs. They're visionary problem solvers. They're very knowing. They're volunteer-minded. You know, how many times have you picked up the paper or turned on your television set and learned about the latest 4-year-old or 5-year-old or 7-year-old that is now gathering money from their own savings account, from neighbors, from churches, maybe in the city, and they're sending that money over to maybe Africa to dig water wells or doing anything they can to help people. They're groupies. They move as if they're part of a collective. They often attend night school in addition to dreaming. If people were going to ask me, what is the greatest talent of these children? I would say it's their ability to abstract. They're spatial learners, and they start abstracting at young ages. Let me give you just a quick little example of what I mean by abstracting. This is 2.5-year-old Michaela. And she and her mother are involved in this big discussion, and Michaela gets angry. And she puts her hands on her hips, and she marches over to her mother. Now, remember, she's only 2.5 years old. She marches over to her mother. She wiggles her finger in front of her mother's nose, and she says, "I don't know the word for that yet." Well, what 2.5-year-old is going to think in conceptual terms? I'll give you another example. You know, this is from my near-death work. This is a 6-year-old. He's in first grade. He drowns halfway through school year, and it was resuscitated, and you know, they get him over the trauma of that. He's now back in school. Now, this is in Atlanta, Georgia, getting closer to your neck of the woods. And you know what? The kids are reading in the first grade. It's something like See Spot Run or Dick and Jane. He's coming back reading Greek mythology and understanding it, by the way. And he goes up to his teacher and he says, "Why was the book Robinson Crusoe ever written?" It's like, tilt. Whoa, wait a minute here. These kids, abstract. You know, we think they're so wise. Not wisdom. Wisdom takes time to integrate and, you know, be a part of your cellular structure and your energy so that you really, truly know what you're talking about. This isn't wisdom. This is a talent. This is an ability. And it has to do with the way the brain and the mind, although the way the mind comes through the brain. I would say this is their number one talent. They look at sex, a fusion of sexes, gender mixing, doesn't bother them at all. What was it, like maybe 4 years ago now, 3 or 4 years ago, Katie Couric, in one of her documentaries on television, she was going around to the different schools, different high schools, and talking about sex, you know, junior high and high school, and the sexual leanings of the kids in school. And she found out that, let's see, what was it? It was high 40s. It was something like 48%, 49%, maybe 46% of all of the kids across the country that she was able to contact or hear about or interview were bisexual. So we're looking at a very large group, even back then, of kids that really look at sex very differently than we do. These are multi-sensory, multi-channelers who live in a multiverse. You know, you've already spoken about that. But if we look on the minus side, these kids are impulsive. You know, they're impatient. They feel entitled. Many of them are overconfident. They're the ultimate consumers. There's an underlying anger. They have very little tolerance for lies and manipulation. They prefer the astral and the synthetic world.
And they can recognize that. They can recognize
that. Oh, boy. There are so quick.
That's an important point because, you know, they've got talents beyond, beyond their parents
in the funny papers in your, hopefully, your newspaper every morning? What's it called? Non Sequitur? And they talk about Danae. Have you ever read The Adventures of Danae? She is so typical of these kids. The latest was she thought she could be the Pope. And, you know, she went through this thinking of why I could be the Pope. And her father informed her, well, number one, you're not an old man with white hair.
Right.
And he goes through all these things of why you can't be the Pope. Mm-hmm. But she's always thinking in these kinds of ways. And she's so typical of these kids. They're highly sensitive to drugs and snack and processed foods. You know that from your work.
Mm-hmm.
And any kind of incoherent or electronic energy. So, you know, here we are in the digital age. And they're super sensitive to that. They have no concept of authority. They need mentors, not bosses. They just do not assimilate nutrition well. They just don't. They appear wiser than they are. Self-deception is an issue. They're very sensitive to trickster energy. So you're going to know about this, the possessive energy, the attachments, the psychic attachments that can be in the air or in a person's home, or they can get from TV shows and so forth. They're very sensitive to that. They do not understand at all the effort needed to process or refine. Their thinking is, why should I go to college and get a degree when I already know it? You know, they just don't
kind of
understand.
Like Jobs.
They don't understand the need to refine
anything. Look at
their
role models, too. I mean, the role models didn't go to college.
The most successful
people
they just don't understand
that,
at all.
To, you know?
Nor do they understand having to pay for something they think ought to be free, like your music. You know, we've had all kinds of
movies,
deals, you know, copyright
healthcare.
Infringement.
Right.
I mean, they want everything to be free. They expect things
to
come to
them. In the higher realms, it probably is.
And they don't recognize boundaries, even that of skin. Their greatest fear is silence. They don't know what to do with it.
Right.
That's very, very sobering. You know, when we're looking at learning disorders, and I tackle that a lot in the book, especially Chapter 11, I wish everybody on the planet would read Chapter 11 in Children of the Fifth World. It's called A Different Perspective. And that's where we really take a look at things like ADHD, autism, dyslexia, and so forth and so on, and come to realize that there's all kinds of proof in history that so-called mad men and mad women made better leaders than normal folk. Look at Abraham Lincoln. He suffered deep depressions, heard voices, and had startling visions. Winston Churchill suffered from bipolar disorder. What these men struggled with made them sharper and better able to recognize and act on problems. You know, we look at FDR, Frank Delano Roosevelt, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Both dealt with mania. We've got Gandhi, Martin Luther King, General William Sherman from the Civil War days, Ted Turner, are more recent. They all had unconventional brain function. These brain glitches can really be the flip side of scary learning disorders. They're in reality brain glitches. They enable the individual to function differently, think differently, process differently. You know, if we look back in history, about maybe 40,000 years ago, there was a mutation that developed in the human family. Today, we call it ADHD. And that mutation developed in such a way that it literally saved the human family. Because the human family then was faced with extinction. I mean, it was really big, from weather, earth changes, famine, that kind of thing. And this mutation suddenly developed. Now, that mutation enabled the people to become hunter-gatherers, to strike out on their own with daring and guts and, you know, very inventive just very creative people, and they just wouldn't take it. You know, they would just, you know, find a way to survive. Very, you know, gutsy, strong, daring, innovative kind of people. Now that gene, or I think it's really a combination of genes, became quiescent after that, after the human family was saved. We didn't become extinct. And it rose again in the human family only when the human family was threatened again with war, famine, disease. It's like populations were threatened. And we haven't seen it to any real degree until about the 1990s. Well, late 80s, 1990, from then. And it took, Dr. Susan, it took a 600% jump just within a 2-year period in the human family, especially, of course, in the United States and Europe, but throughout the world, but especially here, it took this 600% jump. And, you know, I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, now, wait a minute, it's here. Thomas Edison had it. It's called the Edison gene. You know, it wasn't called ADH. It was called the Edison gene. It was very creative. Is Mother Nature trying to tell us something about the future with this explosion in ADHD cases? You know, it only happens, we know now through genetic research, only happens when it's needed. So here we are. It's happening again. Is Mother Nature trying to tell us something?
Well, we'll see shortly, won't we?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of sobering. So I really invite people to especially read Chapter 11 in that book, because I go on and on into deviants and mavericks, this kind of thing, and how good they are for society. And wait a minute here, folks, we're drugging these kids. We're taking this incredible traits, and we're calming them down. Now, in some cases, maybe that's okay. But maybe there's other ways of handling it where we're not drugging them, but yet we're calming them down in a way that society can handle them, the parents can handle them, maybe. You know, it's a little easier to take. There's been two ways of dealing with this more naturally that's just popped up in the last year. And I'd like to quickly mention that for you and your audience. One of them, I'm going to say, please, please, please get the book, Kids Beyond Limits. The secondary title is one of these long things, so I'm not even going to go into it. Kids Beyond Limits. It's by Annette Benel. Annette is A-N-A-T. Benel is B-A-N-I-E-L. This woman has found a way through exercise, through toning, through movement, through natural means to be able to take the various kinds of learning disorders like autism, Asperger's, brain damage, ADHD, other developmental delays, and turn them around to the point where, in many cases, she has a cure or nearly so from then on. She's using natural ways to turn things around. And her work is explosive. I don't know if you remember, I don't know what it was like for you when you were a kid, but when I was a kid, the biggie was polio. It was everywhere. Kids were dropping like flies. Adults were, too. I did, too. I had polio at the age of 4. Now, I had a milder version of it, but I still had it. And it was Sister Kenny. Do you remember Sister Kenny? She came out of Australia. And she was the one who challenged the MDs, all of them, said, don't put these kids and these adults in steel braces. Don't lock them up. And, you know, don't treat them the way you're treating them. If you'll use heat and exercise and massage, you can bring those muscles back. And she did it. She had cure after cure after cure, or nearly so. and the medical science would not ever recognize her. She was called Sister Kenny, and her story is just... So I look at Annette Benel, and I'm saying, here's another Sister Kenny. She is challenging physicians, psychiatrists, you know, the whole medical scheme here, and she's saying there's another way to do it, and it's more natural. Now, on top of her, there's another woman called Plesser. I don't know that she has a book, but if your audience can get the magazine, The Intelligent Optimist, it's their latest issue, so we're talking January, February 2013. And the article is Say Goodbye to ADHD. And it's, the article is by Hanny Roskamp. But the article, Say Goodbye to ADHD, and it's in The Intelligent Optimist. And she's sort of on the track of diet, but specifically the elimination diet, and of what she's found that I've been tracking for years and years and years, and I've been noticing it a lot, is it's not just watching the child's diet, giving them organic foods, making sure they have certain types of foods, but rather having them put through these allergy testings. And if you do that, you'll find specifics for the child, for that given child. And it's different for different kids. This mammoth influence of diet on our children today. And she gave an example there of a little boy who was off the wall with ADHD in that, you know, allergy diet kind of thing. They found that he couldn't handle anything from the nightshade family. So no tomatoes, no eggplants, no potatoes. Within months of taking him off the nightshade family, he was normal. And they're finding
another,
There's
another part to that story, though. We have a NAIT practitioner here, Dr. Mike Greenberg, who actually studied with the founder of NAIT in L.A. And it's vibrational. It's a vibrational thing having to do with...
Yes.
The acupuncture meridian points. And so once you identify that, you can actually do NAIT, and then the kid can have nightshades, and they won't produce the vibrational disruption. So, you know, it's really hard if the kid has nightshades, wheat, corn, and, you know, rice or something to feed these kids, especially if they go to school and try to do
school lunches.
Yeah, what
are they going to eat?
So it's just better to identify them and then treat them so that vibrationally, whatever it is, whatever vibrations these foods are bringing in that are disruptive, you know, settle out. So
that'd be a quicker way of doing it.
That
forever. Absolutely, and I'm glad we're discussing this, and I'm glad everybody's listening.
Well, you can go and look up NAIT. It's NAET. The N stands for the woman's name, which is Indian. It's I can't pronounce it, so I'm not going to try to. Allergy Elimination Technique. And the practitioners she's trained are all over the place, all over the world. So there's most likely one near you, you know, if you have a
problem. If you could drop me an email on her and how to get a hold of her or her email address or any of that, I would like to have that.
Simple.
I could pass it on.
Just put NAET, all caps, in, and her information comes up. I've actually had her on the radio show, but I'm not sure I have her email address. But I can look for you. But,
okay,
you know,
I
mean, anybody
that.
can find it on the web because it's you know, it's under NAET, all caps. And the website's up there, and then you can find the practitioners in the website. But, yeah, that's one. And then the other thing that really works well is homeopathy because it's vibrational.
Oh, yeah.
And there's
a
homeopathy medication we've been using here for a while along with NAIT called Attend, A-T-T-E-N-D. And it's put out by VAXA. And it's been successful. Then the other thing I find, if you do hair analysis on these children, they often have high levels of antimony and other particular things that are associated with ADD. And, you know, we don't know. Genetically, they may not be able to get rid of the antimony, or they may be exposed to antimony somewhere that we don't know. But whatever it is, there's an association there. And if you get rid of the antimony, the symptoms get better, too.
Oh, yeah. Right. I'm just so glad all of this is coming out. This is good. Because these kids are just so brilliant.
They have a vibrational problem. They have too much information coming in, literally. That it's a sensory overload problem. It's a
brain problem.
Well, they're
still connected to the other side in many ways.
Yeah.
So,
but you've got to be able to slow it down. And
well, certainly
you know,
on this side, you have to slow it down. Right.
Yeah.
And through our various screens and Facebook and social networking and all this other kind of stuff, yes, they're getting too much information too fast. And resulting in sleeplessness and, you know, all kinds of deviant behaviors. What I tell people is get the kid out the door, you know, and get their hands in the garden. Help them, teach them about gardening, teach them about doing dishes by hand, making food sculptures and food modeling by hand. Get them into where you're making a pot on the potter's wheel. You know, there's nothing like wet clay or wet dirt that just draws out negativity and depression and restlessness just right out of you.
Yes. These are all grounding techniques. And also spiritual practices, any spiritual practice, you know, playing music, doing art, you know, doing yoga, doing Tai Chi or Qigong, especially Qigong, what that does, any spiritual practice will slow down the vibratory input. It just does. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever noticed that when thoughts go by really, really quick and you can't quite grab them, and then later on something happens and you realize that you were warned about it, but the thought was too quick? What I tell people is, if that happens to you, just meditate more or do some sort of spiritual practice more, and then the thought will be slower, and you can actually grab onto it and recognize its importance. You know, so
you
any spiritual
that,
practice,
or you just stop where you are right that moment, take a deep breath, swallow. That's important. After the breath, swallow, and then what it was that was going by will be right there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to stop, shut your mouth, take a deep breath, let it out, and swallow.
Okay.
Just that technique clears the neural pathways in the brain, and you're able to get things clearly and quickly. So, you know, that's very helpful. One of the things they found in schools, with those schools that are willing to do that, if they have 15 minutes silence, i.e. meditation in the morning, 15 minutes silence, i.e. meditation in the afternoon, just do that, 15 minutes of absolute quiet in the morning and in the afternoon, the dropout rate plunges, scores skyrocket, kids feel better, they're interested, they do better, and it helps the teachers too. All you need. 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the afternoon in school. Those schools that do that get this incredible, outplay of, you know, dropout rates are just almost gone, and the scores begin to skyrocket. That's all they need. So it's just what you're talking about. These kids are very, very spiritual, and they're coming into a world that's it's a different kind of world. You know, when we're talking about, you know, we've talked about the fifth root race, this unique characteristic of qualities that our children are bringing into the world. And it's us. They are us. This is the human family from now on. This is who we are. But they're coming into a world that is fitting for them, or I should say they are fitting for the world. We've got all of these fives, all of these fifths that have now been either discovered or accepted, interestingly enough, since 1982, when we had the fifth communication wave came in 1982 with our computers. We now recognize that we have the fifth brain, you know, the different parts of the brain, major parts, and the fifth brain is the heart. We had a lot of research on the heart, which I know you know about, and we recognize now that about 65% of the cells in the heart are neural cells, and that the heart reacts and picks up what's going to happen before it does. Sometimes 12 seconds before, sometimes 20 seconds, 30 seconds, sometimes even a couple of minutes before. The heart will pick up what's going to happen before it does, and it's the heart that alerts the brain. You know, the heart is literally our first responder. And we have the fifth brainwave frequency now. You know, it used to be delta and theta and alpha and beta. Well, we now have a fifth one. That's gamma or high beta. You know, we function as much in high beta as anywhere else. Fabulous. And, of course, the fifth dimension. More and more people are able now to contact the fifth dimension. That's free of time-space states. That's supposedly where the Akashic records are. All the records are in that fifth dimension. Intention rules the fifth dimension. We get feedback instantly there. We've got that fifth ray that's coming in. That's the goddess energy. That's Mercy. That's Venus. That's the female. And so, you know, what kind of issues are now number one almost everywhere, even in the world? You know, look at, what is it, Malala in Pakistan, huge issue about the woman's right or the female's right to education. So we're getting more and more of the female and the goddess energy, and that's the fifth ray.
I want to mention my book that I'm a part of. It's called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. Editor was Stephanie Marone, and you know, we have Oprah, Michelle Obama, Jane Fonda, Shirley MacLaine, Angelina Jolie, Madonna, Whoopi Goldberg. It goes on and on and on. But
Lady
I wrote
Gaga.
One of the chapters on spiritual healing and synthesis medicine. So, we do have a lot of female leadership in different things, in different areas, politics,
and
law,
in now.
Business,
and it's going to continue.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, androgyny, you know, you talk about these studies with the children being more androgynous. Androgyny is rising up everywhere. You know, men are becoming less testosterone-based, and women are becoming less estrogen-based. You know, it's interesting. But I do believe in the higher realms, and you know this, in the higher realms, there is more group consciousness. There's less polarity, which includes male and female, you know, being so far apart. And as we evolve spiritually, we will become more androgynous. Michael Jackson was one of the androgynous-based, you know, leaders of the world. You know, he was basically...
Yeah, he certainly was.
You know, he was neither black nor white, neither male nor female, you know. He was just really androgynous.
Yeah, you couldn't
and look
get
at,
him.
Look, exactly, and look at how he affected the thinking of the world, especially the children.
Yeah,
you know,
especially the children.
Exactly. Yeah,
and we
so,
now
you know, I think
have
that's
been able
future.
To identify five basic forces. You know, we always used to think that the forces of the world, there were four, you know, electromagnetism, gravity, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force. Well, the fifth one has now been identified. It's torsion waves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, torsion...
Yeah, they're quite important.
Yeah.
Scalar energy.
Well,
yeah.
They're the information carriers. They ensure that nothing is ever lost. They preserve information within a system to prevent the increase of entropy.
You know, they're the ones that warp and motive and modify space and time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're associated with psychic phenomena, what the Russians call biogravity or bioplasma,
right.
Bioenergy. They're associated with sacred sites and dark matter and dark energy and crop circles, interesting enough.
Right.
But it's torsion waves. And
yeah.
We're going to be hearing a lot more about torsion waves. As we do
right.
Even more research with it, with them. So
well,
you know,
we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. Well, my website is www.pmhatwater.com. It's just one word, lowercase. The P is in Paul, M is in Mary, H is in Howard. And then at, and then water. Yes, that's really my name. .com. I do put out a free monthly newsletter. So if you want to subscribe, just get on the website. You can do so there. I just put out an issue 2 days ago, and it's about orbs. The truth
right.
about orbs and all kinds of newsy news.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what you're going to get from me because I never know what's going to be in it.
Great.
Yeah, you never know until the last minute what's going to be in there, and then whoops, there it is.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. It's been a delightful conversation. We've been talking about Children of the Fifth World, A Guide to the Coming Changes in Human Consciousness. And next week we will be talking with Dr. Amit Goswami, God is Not Dead, What Quantum Physics Tells Us About Our Origins and How We Should Live. On the 16th, Dr. William Rea will be talking about multiple chemical and electromagnetic sensitivity, which is now more common. And on the 23rd, Dr. Jennifer Howard, Your Ultimate Life Plan, How to Deeply Transform Your Everyday Experience and Create Changes That Last. The Noetic Science is on the 21st of March. Tricia McKinnon will be presenting Galactic Awakening and the Birth of Homo Luminous. And we have a Plasticos meetup group on the 26th of March. Dr. Gordon and myself and Cindy Stockton, our esthetician, will be here, and I'll be giving a lecture on breast implants, what you need to know. Ken Boxberger is doing the Law of Attraction group every Wednesday at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. And this has been Temple of Health Radio Show. Thank you very much. And PMH, thank you so much for the great interview.
Well, thank you.
We'll be back next week.